You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi there, I'm Brian Abana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Podcast.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to this week's Mall Over Podcast, the only rugby podcast that gives you the news, views, and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Mall Over Podcast. We are Mall Over Podcast on Facebook. You can find all of our podcasts on Anchor and all of the places that Anchor disseminates podcasts to. I'd love to be able to list them, but I cannot. One of the main ones being Apple Podcasts, but you'll know that if you found us already. I've got some special news for all you listeners. 2 weeks on the bounce, we've got a full complement. So we are joined by the housewife's favourite from his cow shed in North Cornwall. Welcome, Phil Elkins, farm vet.
Russell, how are you?
Very well, yes, I'm excellent. Live from Amersham, which is not strictly West Country, granted, but the voice of reason, everyone's Twitter go-to is the Chinese lensman. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm not in Amersham. I'm at the ex-wife's house. Nothing like that.
Nothing like that. I mean...
Definitely nothing like that.
I mean, that's positive. I'm calling that positive and progress. So we'll move on.
We're winning.
Yeah, we'll move on from that. And the nicest man in Cornish rugby podcasting with a dog named Duke. Who I see is really, he's made himself at home, Ben. He's taken on, he's now communicating. I'm surprised he's not got his own Instagram account. Is that something that's going to be forthcoming?
No, I don't think he should be trusted with it yet. He's quite young. I don't want him getting catfished or anything.
Oh, I like that.
Is that a thing?
It is a thing. Yeah, I thought you were going for a cat and dog sort of irony joke, but. We'll leave that there. Let's talk about some rugby, shall we? The good news is I'm reading that potentially that there can be some grassroots rugby taking place at some point soon. I've also read on Twitter this evening that is going to be adapted. So there's going to be no scrums or mauls. Has anybody else seen that or is it just me?
Yeah, no, I've seen that as well. Looks like the Boxing Day game down at the Hornets might be on in some way, shape or form. No scrum sounds fantastic to me. I'm well up for that.
If
there's a bit of rucking, I'm happy.
If the Boxing Day game is being played in the usual torrential rain, mud conditions, we're going to need to know how to restart if we can't do scrums.
Well, the restart is with a free kick, is what they're proposing. Mm. But they're also saying no mauls either. So I guess, a maul would be penalised by a free kick as well, going the other way, if you try to set up a maul.
Wow. What a load of old bollocks, are they?
What a load of old bollocks. Because ultimately, if you're in a ruck, you're going to be lying on top of each other anyway.
Why not bother until it's all fixed?
Why not just let people make their own decisions?
Because people need rugby. No, I kind of with Ben a little bit. We're talking about the junior rugby coming back this week as well, and a little part of me just wants to not give a shit till next September.
You know, that's it for scrums and ruck, scrums and mauls in amateur rugby, though, right? They're not coming back. Because there'll be some study that showed how many less injuries there were and how much safer it is for club rugby. And well, that's your lot for scrums.
So we'll be rubbing our hands in joy.
How are people like us supposed to have a rest then, Russ?
I don't know. I mean, if you listen to most, you know, noises on Twitter after the weekend, rugby is just a game of kicking and tackling now anyway, isn't it? So you just find yourself in a place where you're not going to have to do either of those things or return a kick.
Much in the same way that when I first started playing American football, we played a variation of flag football, which was full contact blocking, but flag tackling. And that the idea behind that was that it gave young lads a chance to play on the offensive and defensive lines in a proper manner, because the contact there is managed. And obviously the blocking was part of the game. What that then did was the lads that played that then could transition into adult or junior kitted football, and they'd be able to have the fundamentals of playing on the offensive and defensive line. In their infinite wisdom, British American football's governing body decided that it was too dangerous to do that without kit. So the only gateway into football at the moment is 5-on-5 pass ball, which is the first non-kitted football you get, which has had added knock-on of there being no linemen that are being trained to go into adult football. So you're getting a lot lower standard of line play in adult football, which causes more injuries for quarterbacks and receivers. This might happen in rugby. If the scrums and mauls don't come back, you're going to get kids going straight from amateur rugby. Where's the pathway for your forwards? What are the forwards going to become? You're basically going to become a 15-man game of centres, because Big Tell, who plays for the Ferns, isn't going to rock up if there's no scrums and mauls, is he?
And we all love it. We all know a Big Tell.
Exactly.
Or two.
It's just phasing out that part of the game. I think it's... I don't understand how you can have 60, 70 rucks in 40 minutes of rugby or whatever, but you can't have a 1 minute maul. It's just nonsense.
If you get rid of scrums at junior level or youth level, then they'll be gone from the whole game in 15 years' time.
That's exactly my point, because you can't have somebody go from 15 having never scrummaged in their life to adult scrums against gnarly old vets who are going to snap them in half. So.
But it's not that different from that at the moment anyway. I mean, they don't start doing competitive scrums until under 14s or under 15s, I think.
No, but they have scrums, there's no training going on for that kind of contact at all.
No, because it's literally a lean on scrum until it's under 15s. It's a competitive hook and they just stand there. There's no pushing. So you train the basics of getting their good body positioning, good driving position, but ultimately they're not going to do it in a game if they know they're just stood there. So there's nothing there till they get to 14s. I think it's a big mistake that's within the junior setup in Britain that actually they don't bring those kind of things in. There's no competitive lineouts, I think, till under 16s. It's a joke. Or there's no lifting in the lineouts. They have competitive free jumping lineouts at 15s, but there's no competitive lineouts in those 16s. So you go from under 16 to all of a sudden you're 17, 18, playing in the second team game, having never done the bloody things.
So how would you suggest, like, if, say, you're involved with Nuki, my argument would be for a lot of these clubs, well, if we're not going to play rugby, what's the point anyway?
So at the moment, what we're going to do is keep the kids engaged with a ball sport, because we've already lost a couple of players in the under-8s because they can go and play football and play competitive matches. So if we don't do something that's going to keep them engaged with rugby, keep them running around with their mates, chucking a ball about, they'll go and find something else to do that and they won't come back. So that's that's the only reason really to do it as a club, is to keep those kids engaged so that you don't lose them. But what can we do? The only thing that we can do, and I keep saying this to the 12s, which is a much different age group. Yes, they can't work on their contact side that they're very good at. What they can do is work on kind of reading the game and getting their core skills right. But it's very hard to do that
like
a
the
competitive
Kiwis.
Situation. Exactly. Get if core, they can
core
they
skills.
Can,
skulls. Yeah. Skulls. Core but, skulls.
But you joke about it. There aren't many kids at 12 years old who can pass a ball effectively 8 or 9 yards. Most of them struggle to do 5 yards, and that's not a lack of strength, it's a lack of technique.
Fair
but
enough.
Yeah, I don't know. A large chunk of me agrees with you, Doug, other than the fact that football carries on as if it's normal. The kids will just go and play football.
It's always going to be
it
a
It just
battle.
Seems so arbitrary. It just seems so arbitrary. What, like, you know, like a lot of these things, you know, the stupidity of having socially distanced substitutes benches. Like, you know, yeah. you can't catch COVID on a subs bench because your sub jacket keeps you safe. But the second you step on the pitch, you're immune. It's like... I
did see on the bench at Exeter, they just basically fucked all that off on Saturday evening. Once the guys came off, they were all just sat next to each other on the bench. Yeah. Which is, yeah, but why not? They've just been fucking jumping all over each other for the last 60 minutes.
It's just to me, there's... going back to the rules of what they're suggesting with amateur rugby, so are we precluding binding at a drive? So you can't pick from the base of a ruck, bind onto two of your players and drive them over the line like Exeter would?
I guess it's not a maul, is it? So, but it's technically the start of a maul or a.
So you can do that, but then the opposition can't put two people in to make the tackle because then it's a maul.
It just seems
so you can pre-bind with two.
So whose fault is it? Is it the ball carrying team or is it the tackling team?
It's all a bit of a farce, really. Like I think so when it first came back post the original lockdown and the RFU went through their various different tiers, they were saying that you can play rugby ready, which is effectively like the O2 touch matches between clubs. If you want to do something that's competitive. And I tried multiple times, and I think the first team tried to get some games set up, but nobody was really that interested in it. So I think you either say, we're binning rugby, or you can play rugby. And one of the two. Just this halfway house thing is, it helps no one.
Just standard arse covering left, right and centre.
Is that what it is from the RFU? Is this, we don't want to say you can go and play rugby because we're worried you're going to sue us?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course it is.
Probably, yeah.
So why not just send disclaimers out?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, if
why
each...
Why not if individually, you know, JB's been on the Egg Chasers, has been advocating this for a while, is why not just... play unlicensed games.
Unlicensed rugby.
Yeah, so you don't come under the envelope of the RFU. Why not just go out and get individually insured and go and play rugby?
Yeah.
Who are the RFU to stop independent organisations from doing what they want to do?
They can't, can they? That's the point.
You'd have to form your own clubs, wouldn't you? Like breakaway clubs, because if you did it as, for example, let's not say Nuki Hornets,
Fradda Massive.
If you did it as Hookie Hornets or Fradden New Hornets or something, then you could do it. But if you did it under the banner of Nuki Hornets, then Hornets would get chucked out of the leagues, wouldn't they?
Maybe we should suggest starting our own nationwide
Unlicensed rugby league.
Unlicensed rugby structure.
Bare knuckle rugby.
Yeah. It's a bit like the XFL, but you know,
rugby.
Are you the Alan Stanford of the rugby world there, right?
Yeah, yes.
This is basically what happened with rugby league, wasn't it? They were like, well, let's start our own league and get paid for it.
Yeah, and this
that's all it was.
But there are independent leagues around the country, aren't there? Because I think the team that JB is involved with are outside of the RFU framework.
Oh, are they like really?
The Lancashire League is independent from the RFU. So, I mean, the you know, if you want to go and play rugby, what's to stop you? Organised sports can take place outside. Go and get a rugby pitch. Get 15 mates who just might happen to have a Nuki Hornet shirt and go and get set up a game against Vior.
I mean, of all the teams, you know.
It's the go and get a rugby pitch.
Yeah.
Well, it's not, is it? It's a patch of grass. Mark the corners out. If there's one thing you can sack off, is kicking penalties.
Yeah, yeah. Sack off all kicking. Well, kicking penalties, conversions, bin them. Tight lines, well, if you run into the hedge, it's your own shit.
You get 17 points for a try.
It'd be like that time Russ, did you play at that game down at St Just when we went down there and St Just had overlooked the fact that despite having home fixtures for their first and seconds, they only had one pitch?
Yes.
So we ended up playing at Cape Cornwall School with football goals.
Yeah.
We had to use our imagination for conversions.
Yeah. It's like those pre-season football friendlies that happen without a ref, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I played a game at Sulcombe, I think it was, and it's right on the top of the hill, and there's no space there at all. Literally, the space between the touchline and advertising hoardings is about an inch and a half. So you know you go nowhere near that touchline.
I mean, you could offer bonus points. I mean, if the referee's good enough, you could offer bonus points for headshots, neck rolls, seatbelt tackles.
you could make it like in Gladiator when the tigers like fly out of the floor, just go the whole hog,
multi ball,
have a rabid springer spaniel come out of their own.
Yeah, I like the multi ball idea.
Least
when you mentioned Gladiator, Ben, then I thought we were going all John Anderson and Wolf.
you could. It'd be like, here comes the Greggs multi-ball flying on.
the Morris Pasties sponsored multi-ball.
I'm laughing like I know what that means.
Oh, there you go. Anyway, right, let's move on from that. Now we fixed grassroots rugby.
Play your own rugby, break the rules.
I think everyone should tweet us with examples of locally based advertised television features, you know, like the Juicens Building Supplies Action Replay and stuff like that we could introduce. I think that
you mean, like the if you were from around the London area, there was always the big green building on Golders Green Road, which was a carpet warehouse, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was on every local radio station. The big green building on Golders Green Road.
is that like you can get it at Selco where the trade go?
Yeah, yeah.
Fair enough. What I will say...
The Arnold Clark said seatbelt tackle.
did you know that it is exactly just a shift gear... fucking monumentally. Did you know it's 2 years to the week that we invented original rugby content and burgers and stuff like that?
2 years?
Yeah. 2 years, 2018.
God, it feels like more, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it's amazing how many of those have turned into genuine financial prospects for those players.
Ryan Axe Weinrachs, right up there.
I always do think whenever Dave Ribbons knocks on trying to offload out of a four-man gang tackle about his Rave Ribbon business. struggling in that at the moment and all.
Oh, mate, no, no raving going on. No, there's a lot of people struggling. I mean, Danny cares. He's not allowed in any of those care homes.
Death traps, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. He's not allowed to.
Not with that moustache, anyway.
He's had to postpone his further career in pastoral care. Right, let's actually talk about some rugby. England versus Wales on Saturday.
Sorry.
Go on.
Joe Cock and a singer.
That was the best.
Joe Cock and a singer. Excellent. England, Wales, should I say, at arguably the shittest stadium in the British Isles. Can we say that? I mean, can we agree on that? What a fucking place. I've been there many times, unfortunately.
And the worst thing about it is you get to Cardiff and then you don't realise you're still 2 hours away from bloody Cardiff.
is that where you saw the French in Tata Steel? Matteo Bastiano cleaning out Nando's?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Sorry, we've got no chicken there, but your Nando's.
Yeah. Oh, one of the best anecdotes ever. So there's been a lot leveled at this game. And a lot to kind of get through from Romain Poit, who, without even an English bias head on, I thought had a terrific game, making decisions. Rightly or wrongly, he fucking just made decisions. And he just went, nah, I saw that. That was fine. You know, yeah, we can move on from that. It's not a problem. But the fucking amount of salty Welshmen out there—they're getting like the Irish. You know, the Irish are pretty bad. Like we all know that. But you know, there's one Welshman in particular who just needs to put his phone down. Unfortunately, you know, he talks a lot on another podcast too. He won't listen to this, so it's not a problem. But he is an absolute melt, and he just. Like, the tweet that he put out about Thomas Francis getting marched back 10 yards and the supposed headbutt, which didn't actually exist, just from a camera angle. And then somebody else saying, oh, well, I don't need to see another camera angle because that's clearly a headbutt. Well, clearly wasn't, mate. Otherwise, he probably would have been sighted. And also, if it was a headbutt, then you would have thought that the seven other Welshmen in and around that vicinity would have probably have seen it.
Yeah.
Tell you what, if that headbutt, I probably would have got involved in more barroom fights, but because there's absolutely nothing to that at all. Russ, I completely agree with you, as you well know. I thought Poit had a really good game at just taking control of the game, helping the game flow. The game flowed so much better because every time the TMO chirped in his ear, he was like, nothing, fuck off, let's keep playing rugby. That's not to say he got every decision wrong. I think he got it wrong on the tackle in the air on Bigger just before the try. I thought Slade try was going to get knocked off for it. I think actually he got both calls on the scrums right, and there's a load of Welsh people getting really shitty about it because Samson Lee got penalised on the first one for losing his feet because his feet were too far back, and then penalised on the next one for pitching when Mako fell flat on his face. And They looked pretty similar, but actually when you look at it, on the second one, Samson Lee, his shoulders finish about 18 inches behind where they start. So Mako can't do anything apart from fall on his face. And the first one, Mako's shoulders stayed at exactly the same place as where they were. In fact, they probably slightly moved forwards a bit. But it's really easy pretty much to think every decision's going against you when you get beat. But no, I thought he had a pretty...
I mean, let's be honest. If it wasn't for the Henry Slade charge down kick from Dan Bigger, who ironically, did anybody see the tweet from Austin Healey saying his hands moving forward, it must be a knock on. Fuck me. That cunt works for BT Sport. Yeah. Like, if it wasn't for that, Wales would have been nowhere near the game. Like, it just... I thought Wales were poor. They defended quite well. And I thought England's kicking game that we talked a lot about last week. Are those Chris for you, Doug?
Did I not mute my mic?
The England kicking game that we talked a lot about last week against Ireland really wasn't up to scratch. And you notice in the first few phases, probably the first 10 minutes, how many passes were actually behind people. I don't know if you guys noticed that, Ben. Just the accuracy. Every time England were getting on the front foot, there would just be a pass that somebody had to reach to get rather than take into contact or come onto the ball.
Stop their momentum.
Yeah.
I thought Wales actually defended pretty well, and I think that was probably a part of that as well, as they were quite aggressive in their defence. They played a bit defensively, a bit like England did or have been doing of late, and I think probably put England off their march a little bit. But they looked impotent in attack.
Yeah. Well, they did. They didn't look to have any... I mean, a centre partnering of Nick Tompkins and Johnny Williams, who both played for England in non-cap internationals events against the Barbarians. You know, fair play to Johnny Williams for his comeback. I mean, I've always liked him when he was playing for Newcastle. I never thought I'd see the day that he'd be starting in a 12 shirt in international rugby. I've got to be honest. I've liked him as a player, but I didn't think he was of that level. So it's an interesting one. Ben, what did you make of the sort of the game as a whole?
Well, I think you would probably expect that kind of performance from that Welsh team, because on paper, it didn't look a very strong team. But actually, if you look up the spine of the side, you've got Alan Wynne-Jones, Faletau, whichever Welsh nine plays is strong, bigger, and then Halfpenny at fullback. So at least they had a spine. So you'd think at least they should be able to be organised and defend quite well. But in terms of their attacking players, there wasn't a great deal of experience there. I mean, I don't think Rhys Samet touched the ball in the first half. And I thought, to be fair, Wales probably acquitted themselves quite well. I think Phil's right that they probably right to feel aggrieved about not getting a penalty off that tackle. Although, I mean, it was, what was he, about 4 inches off the ground? So it was, you know, it's not the end of the world to me that wasn't given as a penalty,
but by the letter of the law,
that I'm sure it's right. I think England, they just stuck to the plan that worked against Ireland, and they just didn't do it quite as well in this game. Your point about the passing early on is totally correct, but they were just too powerful for Wales, I think, and just really, I think they just knew Wales weren't going to score too much against their defence, so they didn't get too ambitious. But I'm convinced now that the game plan is they have a couple of looks, and I think with Ford in there, they just have a couple of sort of runs in tight, and then they might try, if they don't break through there, they might have a look wide. But if nothing's on, the game plan is to kick it away. So I don't think it matters who plays at 10. Could be Ford, Farrell, Simmons,
Smith. You say that.
They're all going to kick the ball a lot, because I think that's just... Eddie's just decided we're safer without the ball, because if you get turned over out wide, or if you get tackled out wide, you're going to get turned over.
I agree with what you're saying. But I just thought, and I said this on Saturday, we look so much... The accuracy was lacking, and I think there was general accuracy issues all game for England, kicking and in hand. However, I thought we looked so much more of a threat running the ball with Ford at 10 than we did with Farrell. Doug, we've not heard from you on the England Wales game yet. What did you think about it?
Well, I didn't watch it, mate. That's why I haven't said anything.
Fair enough, mate. We'll leave you there. You've not seen it at all.
I watched the last 10 minutes, watched Jack Willis get a turnover, and then had a beer. That was it. Cheers.
He's fucking phenomenal, by the way, Jack Willis. Fair play. The positions he gets his body into when he gets a turnover. He's basically doing the split, almost like a half splits, and he's getting such a strong position. And it was just fucking, it was mental.
That pack, for, you know, all Twitter was all day was people complaining about England's attacking play. But that pack is fearsome now. I think Launchbury was brilliant. The try that Mako scored, the two runs that made any ground were because Launchbury latched on. He just kept coming back in and working. And he's a bit of a water carrier, isn't he? He's not very spectacular, but he just gets through so much work. Itoje, I can't remember the last time Itoje had a bad game, and he's a pain in the ass. And the back row is just phenomenal. Like, because Willis makes so many turnovers, everyone's just forgotten that Curry is brilliant at the breakdown. And, you know, he made a couple, and Underhill made one. And as a pack, it's pretty fearsome now. It's just...
Which gives Eddie Jones the option for horses for courses selections, doesn't it? If you need to play against a team where you might need to slow them down and keep them in the ruck and keep them honest at the breakdown, you might pick Jack Willis to start. Or, you know, you go... It just gives you the ability to move things around a little bit. And when you can play, potentially, you can play Itoje at six, which allows you to pick an extra back rower, or, you know, not having a lock on the bench if you've got Itoje at six, or whatever options you decide to choose.
I don't think Itoje should ever play at six for England again.
I know, but what I'm saying is you've got options.
The only time you should play six is for the last 15, 20 minutes if it gives you more flexibility on the bench. But yeah. I don't... He's not a star six. He'd be in a world second row at the moment.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any reason with the back row players we've got that guy should be on at six.
Yeah, I agree. I think
the two positions.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think they'll be playing that kind of bench a lot with two back rowers on the bench.
It makes a lot of sense. Especially as if you could have... I mean, Watson probably didn't get enough opportunity to shine. He did some good stuff. He made that break wide and the lead up to Mako's try, didn't he? When that was kind of what got it going. But you think if you had a nine and someone like Jonathan Joseph on the bench, for instance, or Watson, someone with the flexibility at England having that in that back line, having a utility back, if you've got Ford and Farrell on the pitch, if you've got Slade and Joseph and Watson and Daly, if you've got that level of flexibility, you can go for that 6-2 bench without having too much worry.
It gives you options then, because you've got, you could have someone like Willis. If you're ahead, Willis is a nightmare for the opposition because he'll come in and just turn over, you know, what was he on, 20 minutes and going to turn over, you know, you bring him on and you got to be so careful about attacking. But if you've got that flexibility on the bench, you could have someone like Earl or Simmons or Mercer to bring on if the game, you need to chase the game.
And that's the point. That's the point, isn't it? Is that as well, if you've got six forwards on the bench, if you're playing that heavily defense orientated game with a kick and a kick chase, your backs aren't necessarily going to be expending that much energy, which means your forwards are going to do a lot of the heavy lifting, which means you have the six forwards on the bench and you can really freshen that up, which is going to give you that extra edge in the last sort of 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, we argue about the centres all the time, but as long as you've got two centres you can tackle in that lineup, it doesn't matter that much.
Well, it doesn't when you're kicking as much as we're kicking at the moment.
You know, I just think that they're playing very much like Saracens used to play. And that's why he's not so interested in a lot of the Exeter players, because Exeter is more of a slow burn, isn't it? It's more of a slow burn in attack and it's more of a passive defence. Whereas with the style he wants to play, it's very aggressive.
Yeah.
And Underhill's perfect for it.
He was phenomenal on Saturday, by the way. I mean, not only his tackling, but his, well, one thing I've noticed about him is his carrying.
The poor kid deserves a try. He's had three or four times where he had one disallowed. Was it in the final? Was it the World Cup final?
Semi-final, wasn't it?
Semi-final.
He's had two disallowed versus the All Blacks, hasn't he?
Yeah. I was sure he was going to score on Saturday and then just failed at the last hurdle. But yeah, he definitely deserves one. But no, he's been phenomenal. Go ahead, Ben.
Sorry, I was just going to say that Slade try was. We've said England aren't been very, very creative, but that Slade try was a really good try.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's when being creative in the right areas. The showreel.
But apart from Jordan Ayew's try last week against Ireland, they're just not doing the showreel tries. They're doing the really well constructed tries, and they're chucking the ball about when they're dominating within the opponent's 10-meter line. But,
they're winning test matches, aren't they? That's what they're doing. Just moving towards this weekend. If no one's got anything to add about the Wales game. Oh, Phil, you wanted to talk about Alwyn Jones.
Yeah, I did. So it's something that I've had a thought, and it's an opinion. It's nothing more than that. If you want to come at me and tell me I'm talking shit, that's fine. I suspect Ben will disagree with me, judging on some of the stuff that he said earlier. People are getting such massive chubbies about Alan Wynne-Jones, and I just don't see it. I'm not saying he's a bad player. I'm not saying he's shit. But friend of the pod, long-term listener, we all had dinner with him, apart from Dougie, a couple of weeks ago, Ryan Keyshaw. There was a question came up. Who's the hardest working rugby player you've ever seen? And he said Alan Wynne-Jones. And I'm like, yeah, he's reliable, he's dependable. I just don't think he's as anywhere near as exceptional as people make him out to be. I think there's two big reasons why he's got as many caps as he's got, and that's because Wales haven't had any strength and depth in the second row for 10, 15 years, and because he plays in a Mickey Mouse league where there's just not the physicality training his body that comes from the Premiership, the top 14 Super Rugby, that means that he can keep on going for as long as he's gone on. I think it's more impressive that Simon Shaw went on for as long as he did, playing in France for a significant chunk and playing in England. But that's longevity. That's not hard working. Now, for me, on that pitch on Saturday, I'd say Fartel, Mako, Marrow, Underhill were all harder working than he was. I get that he puts himself around a bit. He also, yes, he makes a reasonable amount of tackles. He doesn't throw in the dominant tackles into that some of these other players do as well. You rarely see him knocking people back. They're more kind of making sure you take people to ground. And I just don't see why people rant and rave about him the way they do. It's like he's a gift from another planet, and he's just a decent player who's hung around for a long time.
I'm telling you, most other teams in the world, he doesn't get anywhere near 100 caps.
Well, I'd say there's probably five, if not six or seven locks in the British Isles that I would put above him. Probably five from England.
Yeah.
It definitely wouldn't be in my top handful in the world at the moment. And like, you roll the clock back 10 years. So many lines, caps, et cetera, et cetera. Roll the clock back 10 years. Paul O'Connell was a better second row than he was.
James Ryan. Each nation has got
just that, had so. Very limited challenge within Wales in second rows. They just haven't had four second rows at any one point.
Ireland have got Devon Toner. Scotland have got Johnny Gray. We've got probably Launchbury is the closest you can get to a Wynne-Jones.
The one positive that he has got is he does seem to, I'm going to contradict myself here, he does seem to inspire other people and seems to be seen as a really good leader by the rest of the team. Having said that, his form as captain is pretty fucking shocking.
I think that's the point though, isn't it, Phil? Like he's well regarded by everyone, and I've spoken to people who, who've not played alongside him, but sort of met him sort of socially through players. And apparently he's a very impressive man. And I think part of it is his sort of leadership and his character. But you don't get that many caps by accident. To be fair, I think Dougie probably summed it up quite well in saying he's similar to Johnny Gray. You know, works hard, makes his tackles. And also, but he's got that added sort of leadership and character to go on there. And you're probably right. If he was from New Zealand, he wouldn't have as many caps, but you don't get that many by accident. And, come across that we think he's sort of a no-hoper from the local thirds or anything like that.
No, but when you go through the, you tell me a lot in the last 10 years, right? I could probably name you 3 or 4 plus Alan Wynne-Jones, Welsh second rows, Luke Charteris, Jake Ball, because he's playing now. Who was the geezer that went on the Lions tour? Corey Hill?
Hill, yeah. You got like Goff and...
Ian Goff, yeah. But, you know...
That's a chunk of... Now, I'm not saying he's a shit player and I'm not saying he doesn't deserve a reasonable amount of international caps. I'm just saying that I don't think he's anywhere near as hardworking as Richie McCaw was when he was playing. I don't think he's anywhere near as good a second row as Paul O'Connor was when he was at his best. I don't think he's anywhere near as hardworking or as good a second row as Maro Itoje is at the moment. I just think he's a reasonable international player.
Yeah, well, you're not exactly setting a low bar, are you? He's not as good as Paul O'Connor or Richie McCaw.
but the point is, there's people out there who are saying he's literally, this is what Ryan Kieschel said, he's the hardest working player that he's ever seen over the span of his career. And I just don't see it.
It's fair enough.
You can't knock someone for that opinion. And if he thinks that, and he's probably watched him a lot for Wales I'd argue that point based solely on the fact that he probably only plays 10 games a year and 9 of them are for Wales.
Well, and the other one that he plays is against a Mickey Mouse team in a Mickey Mouse league.
Yeah.
I've got
rarely the best player on the pitch whenever I watch the Wales game or, God forbid it, a Swansea game.
But to his credit, he's rarely the worst player on the pitch either.
No, but he's just you're right. I think there's a cult of, I don't quite know how to put it. There's like a cult of following with him, isn't there? That, you know, he's Alan Wynne-Jones. He's this incredible human being that's, you know, unlike any other player that's ever strapped on a Wales shirt. When actually you look at his... what he does during the course of most games, and it's what a second row should do. He's not Maro Itoje, is he? I've never seen him have a game that's anything like as good as what Itoje does on a weekly basis.
As far as influence,
yeah,
with what he does as a player, as opposed to what he does as a leader or just being a general referee, Norse. Let's move on from Alan Wynne-Jones. The final of the Nations Cup, the Autumn Nations Cup. I don't know, you know, how interested anybody is in this, but I am. It's interesting to see to me the level of squad that the French have picked for the weekend. Have you seen this? Yes, there's no Vakatawa, no Dupont, no Untermack, no Chat.
There's 121 caps across the entire squad, but they've been forced into it. So there was an agreement with the top 14 clubs that no player can play any more than 3 internationals in the window. And the window included the last 6. It was a warm-up game, wasn't it, against Wales? Wales, Ireland, and then they had they obviously didn't play... Scotland. CD, so they had Scotland, and then Italy. So they've had four games already, and there's a limit that says that no players can play any more than three games according to that agreement. So they've lost Fakatawa, Dupont, Olivon. Don't have an option to play them.
Yeah, I mean, which is great news for England in a competition that really doesn't mean anything. It's Twickenham on Saturday, but it just seems a bit of a shame that, you know, everybody would have wanted to see the best of what France has got against England in a bit of a rematch of Paris in February. So
it would have been a very good match, wouldn't it?
Yeah, two contrasting styles. I mean, England didn't get that kicking game right against a French team that love to counter attack like they do, then that would have been a joy.
Have you seen the England squad?
Yes, Alfie Barbieri's in.
Yeah.
Is that just out?
Yeah, he's named a 31 man squad. Which, you know, it's got a few surprises. It kind of is what it is. There's no Joseph who's left the squad with an injury. But Barbieri's in, and you know, the same again, it's funny because I've seen loads of tweets.
It feels a bit like I expect every time there's one of these squad announcements, he's going to name a jar of Nutella as a trainee 10. You know what I mean?
It's funny. The 33 That's players nuts. Have been called up, not 31. And he's, as I say,
I got it, Ben.
Thanks, Doug.
I got it. I just ignored it. I couldn't. But yeah, it's an interesting one, you know, all of the same players are back in, but yeah, I've still seen tweets saying still no Sam Simmons. Like, he's not going to pick him.
It's not going to happen.
Just give it up, Liam.
Never going to meet him.
So, yeah, it's just pointless, you know, and fair play, you know, if that's what he wants to do, that's what he wants to do. Let's not dwell on it. We've talked it to death.
Yeah. So the squad, it's only really Alex Mitchell coming again, Alfie Barbieri and Charlie Yules come back in. Other than that, it's pretty much the same squad.
Charlie Yules, there you go. There's an English Alan Wynne-Jones.
Charlie Yules. Yeah, well played.
17 caps. He's got 17 caps.
Yeah, but he's won them all against Georgia and Fiji.
Off the bench.
Romania and, you know, teams that England play. Charlie Yules, I bet, has won the majority of his caps against the fourth team in the autumn international window. You know, when we've played Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, or Argentina, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a random one thrown in. We played Samoa, and we played Fiji, and we played someone else that's really shit. And that's where
we played Japan a couple of years ago, didn't we?
Yeah.
And we always wear the NAF change kit.
Yeah, and I mean that's no disrespect to Charlie Yules, right? He's a good player. He's probably a lovely bloke, but
I don't get him. I don't get it.
No,
I honestly think
fancies a girl and like everyone looks at her and they're like, I just don't get it. What's he looking at? That's Eddie Jones with Charlie Yules.
I mean, that's Eddie Jones with a lot of players, isn't it? But I could see maybe it's a leadership thing, Ben.
It is. There was one of the games. I can't remember if it was one of the warm-ups or the Italy game or the Georgia.
Can I just butt in? If you're picking Charlie Yules for leadership, your national team isn't good enough.
If that's
a deciding factor on him being picked, there is a fault in the English rugby system.
I don't disagree, Doug. But
two games. He lost to New Zealand and he's lost to France. And other than that, he's won all the rest of the games he's played for England.
All I would say is it was either the Italy game or the Georgia game. I can't remember what it was. And they were size, you know, they had a penalty, kickable range. And you could see the players were looking towards him as one of the people to make a decision. So there is obviously some kind of...
But that's ridiculous. The person taking the kick is the captain.
Yeah, yes. That's a true story.
I have a feeling Farrell wasn't... It was a game Farrell wasn't on the pitch, I think. But I noticed it at the time that they obviously were sort of deferring to him a little bit.
Maybe he's an absolutely rock hard psychopath and nobody wants to upset him. What do you want to do, Charlie? Do whatever you want, just don't touch your face.
Don't upset Big Charlie.
Yeah. Big Charlie, you'll have your jacket.
That's a regular conversation in the Elkins household.
Yeah, indeed it is.
I know what you're saying, but yeah, Barbieri. The interesting thing is that Alfie Barbieri's been picked, and you know, the likelihood of him getting a cap this weekend is probably pretty slim. But
they want to get him in though, because he ran absolute riot at the weekend.
Well, the other thing is,
to be a real through line between the under 20s and the national side at the moment. Yeah. A lot of these players are sort of getting a look.
I guess the other thing is that he can both hook and play in the back row as well, can't he? Which,
yeah,
you know, at international level is a bit of a gamble, but like, imagine having that sort of flexibility on your bench as well.
Yeah. And it would mean Jackson.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure we need that kind of flexibility on the bench, to be honest. But I'm struggling to think of anyone other than Scott Britt who I think convincingly play international hooker or back row.
Listen, mate, if we're picking players because they're just a good leader, then, you know.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Tom Wood doesn't get in for his ability to craft workbenches.
Wood's got wood.
He actually does have what is the name of Tom Wood's sort of joinery business is a play on words with wood. Tom's Wood, or so it's literally like Tom's Wood products or something.
Amazing.
Tom's Wood.
Right, okay. Well, talking about Tom's Wood, let's move on to the Premiership, shall we? We will skip through Newcastle Sale Friday night only because I don't think any of us really watched it. And only to say that, you know, fair play to Newcastle, seemed to be surprising a few teams. They stayed in the hunt against Sale and then scored a last minute try. I think it was Toby Flood that went over, unless I'm very much mistaken.
Yeah. It's fell over. From Mickey Young, and he got his feet stuck in the turf and fell over and landed on the ball.
I don't know if you noticed, but the ball was carried into the ruck before that by Luther Burrell. So it's Luther Burrell to Mickey Young to Toby Flood, with a combined age for the last three people to touch the ball of 378, which, funnily enough, is a Premiership record.
I must admit, I thought at one stage in the England game, I sat there and I thought to myself, Joseph's playing well and Launchery's playing well and so is Faletau. And it was like, this is very 5 years ago, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, all three of those players you mentioned, obviously not Launchbury, but let's start that again. Two of the three players that you mentioned could have done a job for Bath on Saturday evening. But before we get to Exeter Bath, let's go to the Gardens, Franklin's Gardens, Saturday lunchtime for what was an absolute Super Rugby points fest. Northampton versus Quins. Doug, you were there. On camera two,
three.
Just a guess. I mean, I watched it on television. Ball in hand, Saints look okay. Again, a few injuries costing them, but defensively they are an abomination. I mean, that's putting it mildly.
Why don't you guys have a general chat if you want to about this game? Because did all of you watch it?
No, I have no interest in having a general chat. I want to hear Doug.
Ben, you watched.
Get some reasonable chat out of it before I, you know.
It was a little bit open, wasn't it? Let's put it that way. I thought. What was the South African playing for Quins in the centre called?
Esterhazen.
I thought he was really impressive. Quinns looked good, but they were made to look good, really. They scored at least one absolutely belting try. But I don't know. I don't know with Quinns.
What's happening there?
Have you all gone into the toilets separately?
No.
That was a very loud noise. Anyway, carry on, Ben.
I just think you've got sort of Hutchinson for Saints, who was setting the league on fire this time last year, and not starting him, and he came on and looked quite dangerous, but although he made a few mistakes, I don't know why he's sort of fallen out of favour. They just were so narrow, they were just getting hit out wide all the time. Just Quinns.
It was a difficult one.
It was easy
for
Quinns, wasn't it?
It was. And I mean, the first half, Quinns were their own worst enemy in the first half. They let Northampton back in through some pretty basic errors. No, Quinns for me should have been out of sight in that first half. And then they got themselves out of sight and then let Saints back in, you know, Hutchinson scored and then Ludlam scored. And it was just kind of basic errors. They seemed to accelerate and take the foot off the gas and in equal measures all the time. And it was just a bit frustrating to watch. And I guess as a Northampton fan, it must have been pretty frustrating for you, Doug.
Yep. I mean, we don't usually get into this, but I'm just going to read you a few statistics out from this game. Harlequins had 24 clean breaks to Northampton's 5. They had 60% possession. They had 12 missed tackles to Northampton's 32. I could go on and on. The amount of meters that were made was massively in favour of Quinns. Northampton play, like possession of a rugby ball, is almost to be looked down upon. You need to make something happen as quickly as possible and get that ball out of your hands no matter what happens. Otherwise, bad things will happen. I've been saying, I don't know how long I've got to say it. I don't know how long and how many times I've said it, but RC Tuala is the worst player in the Premiership. He would be the worst player at Dunstable Rooms. I kid you not. That man is a liability. He gets beaten on the outside so many times.
I think it might be you, Doug. Sorry, are you moving about as you're on your iPad?
No, sorry, I might have my hand on the mic. Sorry, is that better?
Yeah.
He just an absolute liability. The problem we've got at Saints is not scoring points. 29 points should be enough points to win any rugby match. If you've got a competent defence, we don't have a competent defence. We don't have a competent defence coach. We don't have a competent forwards coach. We've got Phil Dowson, who I said when he was given the job, what are his qualifications? How is he going to make the team better? He's mates with half of these people. What positive influence is he bringing to that side? So far, it seems to be absolutely none. I tweeted at half time that we were making Harlequins look like 1970s barbarians. This was a team that we were playing that had been pumped by pretty much everyone they've played for the last 9 or 10 games. We look completely unprepared defensively. Completely unprepared. And what it's doing, I don't know if anyone, I'm going to go back to American football. I don't know if anyone watched any of the NFL last night, but when teams play the Kansas City Chiefs, they're under so much pressure to score because they know that their defense is not going to stop the Chiefs, that it almost makes it impossible for them to do the right thing. And I think Northampton backs know, and the forwards especially know, the forwards know that if they get into a scrum, they're probably going to give away a penalty. The backs know that if they turn the ball over, they're probably going to concede a try. So every time we have a little bit of possession, we're forcing it because we have to score. There's no confidence that we can keep a team out, because I don't think the players believe in the defensive system. I think it's a complete... Everyone just looks tense, completely tense. It's just not good enough. You know, something's got to give, because Harlequins are a bad team. They're not a good team. The bottom three, as from what I've seen a lot of rugby over the last couple of months. From what I've seen, the worst teams in the Premiership are Harlequins, Northampton, and probably Gloucester.
And that's interesting, because Gloucester put in a performance Saturday, beating Wasps. They put 40 points on Wasps.
Just out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think Wasps are struggling through injuries. They've got like international call-ups and stuff. But from what I've heard and what I've read, Billy 12 Trees put in a virtuoso performance for Gloucester. I mean, it's quite something when Billy 12 Trees is still almost single-handedly winning games for Gloucester.
Looks like he's running in treacle though, doesn't it?
Yeah, that must be his main. The other game, one of the other games on Saturday was Bristol versus Worcester. Bristol, as expected, Ashton Gate quite comprehensively beat Worcester. I did want to just touch
on... Yeah, and showed a really nice bit of kind of sevens-like footwork for the first try. Piers O'Connor try was totally... Got a standing start. Three Worcester players in front of him. He took two steps backwards, two to his left, and just flew through a gap. Yeah, really, really neat bit of footwork.
I don't know who he stood up at that point, but they need to get in the sea for a little bit, because they were literally done to death. And you mentioned footwork. I don't want to labour the point on Exeter Bath, Ben, for your sake, because Bath were really, really bad. I don't know whether there was a slight hangover from the Newcastle game. Exeter were, you know, at their most efficient, I think is probably fair to say, without being spectacular again. But you know, Exeter aren't that spectacular team, are they? Other than the try from Tom O'Flaherty, which is one of the best, you know, one of the best volleys of a rugby ball I've seen.
That was absolutely outstanding.
Did you see at that point? Josh Matavesi found himself on the wing, didn't he? Did you see the reverse angle of Tom O'Flaherty volleying the ball and Josh Matavesi trying to turn and run after him? And you could just see it in his face. It was just like, I've got to run after him here, but I've got literally zero chance. I may as well not bother. And
it was interesting with that game, Russ. Like, obviously, I think like most people, I watched the England game and switched on to the Bath game when the England game finished. And it was only 7-3 when I switched on, and then quite quickly, Exeter got a pushover try, Simmons' second try.
Yeah, and then a minute later they scored.
And then literally a minute later, and that just killed the game as a contest. And after that, it was men against boys. That's the only way to describe it, I think. Yours was obviously in there for his leadership, but it didn't go too well in that. Saturday.
I think it was that Simmons try really pissed me off. That you got Zach Mercer, and I like Zach Mercer as a player, but he does this a lot, and it really irritates me. You've got a forward pack like Exeter, who you know drive as an eight, and once the initial shove had gone, he stood up with his hands on the second row's backs. Those players, they need every single ounce of push that they get behind them, and you've got your number eight not even making an effort to look like he's pushing. He's just stood up. Like, you kind of expect it from a flanker every now and then, but that's the situation. Drake's not going to be the one making the tackle if they break away. You need him shoving for all of his might there in a 5 metre scrum. And I just think it's a lack of personal responsibility for that.
I mean, I don't know enough about the workings of a scrum to comment too much on that. Actually, going back to the England game, Mako's try actually came from an England scrum sort of fairly close to the line, and I was watching it, and I was just like, don't overcomplicate this. Just, you've got Billy, just pick it up and run. And they did it, and he nearly made it, and they scored from there. And I think maybe it's the same sort of moral to that story, is just do the simple thing and do it well.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah, definitely.
Simple
physics says, Ben, if you've got a scrum, the more people that are pushing, the more chance you've got of not going backwards.
Yeah, don't overthink it.
And off the back of a scrum, if eight picks and goes, you're relying on your flankers to make the tackle. You're relying on your left-hand flanker, whether that be blind or open, to get up and tackle your eight if you pick and goes. Mm. You're relying on your right-hand flanker to get the scrum off if it's that way, or out to the backs. And your eight really is there for the second man out or the next play, which means that he can afford to stick his head down and give it a shove.
Yeah. Just to change that slightly, 2 weeks in a row now I've watched Bath, and 2 weeks in a row the commentators called Josh McNally Josh McAnally repeatedly over and over and over and over again, and it's really wound me up. Do you know, obviously they would do their research and they would know what someone's name is before they start commentating. You know, Ben, obviously you're the king of pronunciation, so you would.
Sorry,
do that, wouldn't you?
Just repeat that, Russ. I missed that.
The commentator, I don't know who the commentators were. I think it was the same guy who did Bath versus Newcastle last week, and he did Exeter versus Bath on Saturday, and repeatedly called Josh McNally Josh McAnally.
It really winds me up, yeah.
It's just fucking, it's just late. I'll tell you what, it's lazy, is what it is. There's no A in his name, it's Josh McNally, and you know, I shouldn't be getting offended on his behalf, but it's just, to me, it's just lazy. You know, if you're gonna concentrate really hard on saying, you know, Ratu in, I can't even say his name, can I? The Northampton guy from Fiji,
Ratu Niyawara.
That's the one. Or you know, just pick a player at random. You know, you can get an Englishman's name right.
Wow, they say nurses have it tough.
They do, yeah. So ruddy, bloody brave.
I like the way that you just moved me on from Northampton. I was nowhere near finished.
Did I do that?
Yeah.
Sorry, mate. Well, let's go back then.
No, fuck you.
I didn't move you. I didn't move you on. Maybe I did. I can't even remember moving on. But yeah, crap.
Well, anyway, look, Saints are getting relegated this year. It's happening. Because I just want to give you the same.
To be fair, you'll be all right if you go down to Division One and have to play touch.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah.
The replacement front row, James Fish and Owen Franks and Nick Olserak, who's had more clubs than I have in my golf bag, mate. I'm not sure anyone's going to be worried about that. Sean Adendorf, never heard of him.
I thought he was one of the Australian fast bowlers.
Possibly. I haven't been this down about Northampton since Malander.
Oh, everything was so positive.
So rosy,
wasn't it?
Yeah, so rosy. We are comfortably the worst team in the Premiership. Comfortably.
Was Tamara Harrison injured at the weekend?
No, so we were missing Harrison, Bigger, Laws, who was doing a bit of a support game, Naira Voro. And Ollie Slightholm.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned Naya Voro. Like when he first came into the league, everyone was like, "Oh my god, this guy is fucking amazing." He can like, and he's gone right off the piss shed, hasn't he? Like he just
teams just learned how to play him, haven't they? Just attack him. Like he might do something with the ball, but you can't pick him if he's a swinging Jake, can you?
Yeah. That's true. Sunday. Let's go on to Sunday before we find Doug in a corner rocking somewhere. London Irish versus Leicester. Leicester had a positive start to the season last week. And they were welcomed to the, is it the Brentford Stadium, Doug?
I don't know. Brentford Community Stadium.
Is that what it's called, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Catchy.
That's how he said it.
How was it?
It's a nice little ground, actually. Nice and close to the pitch. The camera positions, I don't think, were very good. Too high up. But, yeah, nice little ground, actually. It should be good. And 16,000 capacity. So London Irish will actually fill a couple of sides of it, which will be nice for them. They might even get a few more, train station right next to the ground rather than it being out of town. Yeah, I think it'll be good for Irish.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, I guess it's a lot more intimate than the Medeski.
Yeah, the Medeski is one of the most soulless, sort of tepid environments you could ever play a game in. Even when it was full up for the Premier League games and Reading in the Premiership, it was still just dead. You know, and it's out on an industrial estate. There's nothing around it. You can only get bussed in. This place is like in the heart of London. It's great to get to. I mean, it'd be a nightmare to park out on a Saturday, but it's literally 2 minutes off the M4 and you can get a train. So yeah.
What's the nearest tube?
There's an overground station, Q something or other. Q Bridge, maybe?
Overground's at Kew Bridge, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's, you know, and there's a couple of pubs right next to it. I think it'd be a really nice place to go for an away day, actually.
Yeah.
Because then you can hop on the train and get in the town and get right on the beers.
Right on the sauce. Maybe one day when we can go and visit, you know.
If you haven't all died from doing illegal malls.
And let me tell you one thing, mate. I mean, I haven't been in enough malls in my life to die of a legal mall.
One playing for the Midweek Cowboys at Dunstable and was so scared because my head got trapped between the hips of two forwards. And I was like, wow, this is definitely good. My head's going to get snapped off here.
Were they giving birth to you?
I just don't. It was terrifying. I got out of there quick.
Yeah. There's not many places that I'd least rather be than in the the centre of a mall. No, thank you, sir.
There's I would rather be.
Oh, you're a fucking weird cunt. let's.
Ben's just bowed his head up. We haven't sworn for ages.
Right, let's move on to any other business. We've done a right odd hour and 10 minutes here. Doug, why don't you go first as to any other business?
I worked on the Super League Grand Final on Friday night, and it was, quite simply put, one of the best sporting events I've ever witnessed. If you haven't seen it, anyone listening to this must have seen the finish by now. The final hooter went to signal the end of the game. There's a drop goal that would have been good from about 85 metres had it not hit the very top of the thinnest goalpost in the whole world. Dropped back just in front of the post, bounced up and over the crossbar to be dotted down by a 17 or 18 year old kid playing his first his fifth ever game for St Helens, I think, something like that, to win the match with the last touch of the ball of the game. We talk about rugby union players putting in shifts. One of the St Helens players made 69 tackles.
I mean, that puts a bit of context around someone. Like we say someone's put a hell of a shift if they've made like 22, 23 tackles.
Yeah, 69 tackles. There was claret everywhere. The final score was 8-6.
Where was it? Oh, was it Old Trafford?
No, it tremendous. Was whole stadium. Whole stadium. 8-6. It was 2-0 at half time, and it was 6-4 with no seconds remaining. Just an incredible, incredible game. And it really made you wish that fans were there because it would have been unreal. with a full house there. It would have just been spectacular. If you haven't seen the ending, just if you see it on Sky being repeated, or if you just go to the website and just watch the last sort of 5 minutes, because it's end to end and it's just amazing. A real, not every rugby league match I've ever seen has been like that. I've watched a lot of really bad rugby league matches, which are blowouts, but that was two of the biggest rivals. There was stories all over the pitch, young lads playing, two all-time rugby league greats, James Graham and Sean O'Loughlin, retiring after the game. You know, like I mentioned, blood, bit of niggle. Fantastic advert for that sport. Unfortunately, they're probably the only sport in the world that's worse run than rugby union. So,
fair enough. Ben, when you go next?
I haven't got a lot, really. That guy, Lawrence Fox, I give him a lot of credit for all the crimes he solved, but he's turned into a right belter, isn't he?
He certainly chats a lot of shit on the old Twitters.
Yeah. It's a shame. I like Lewis.
You've got a temper. Anyone that talks a lot of shit on Twitter, you just have to use the prime meridian, which is Donald Trump. His level of shit over the last 3 weeks has just been off the charts, and everyone seems completely sane. So when I woke up to the Lawrence Fox stuff, I was like, checks out. Because the tweet like directly below it is Donald Trump claiming that his own Department of Justice employee who's been defending him might have been involved in the corruption that rigged the election. So, yeah, Lawrence Fox.
He thinks that it's a conspiracy that goes back to the Venezuelan president who died like 8 years ago, doesn't he?
Jesus, just off his rocker. Honestly, yeah. He's the kind of bloke that watches Ancient Aliens and goes, it might have happened. You know, the Incas, they probably invented space travel.
You'd think so, yeah.
How else did the pyramids get there? President of the United States.
I mean, if we're talking about Twitter, you know, Twitter barometers, that's, it's a fairly high bar to set, isn't it?
That's unbelievable.
Rudy Giuliani, he's dropped a bit, isn't he?
Fucking hell. Phil, any of those?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk a little bit about podcasts. Now, to me, a podcast should be an hour long and no more. So that's all I've got to say on it.
Okay, good. I mean, if I could chop this down by 15 minutes.
Phil, do you want to speak for 10 minutes about that?
No, I'm good.
Okay, well, I'll finish off then. And, you know, I may have mentioned once or twice before, I am not in any way, shape or form a fan of motor racing. But the crash at the start of the Bahrain, was it Bahrain? The Grand Prix yesterday, Romain Grosjean is the most horrific racing car crash I think I've ever seen.
Tell that to Ayrton Senna.
Well, yeah, no, and that
it's probably the worst one I've seen this year.
Really?
Yeah.
It literally ripped the car in half. How that metal barrier didn't take his head off, I'll
Did
never
you see the we spoke. We hadn't any other business about Valentino Rossi's one.
Yeah. I mean, that was incredible how he didn't die when the bike didn't literally just wipe him out. This, I have absolutely no idea. Like, the car got ripped in half. And it was that head, they said it's that halo thing that saved him, like the thing that everybody hated and that was introduced for driver safety. And if that wasn't there, the barrier, the metal barrier that he collided with and the front of the car went through, literally would have decapitated him. It is utterly, utterly mental. And you know what the officials said about that particular area of the course, which is why that metal barrier still existed, which was, oh, well, we didn't think that there would be a crash there. That's why there wasn't like a tire wall or one of those other special safety wall things.
When the car caught fire, big, massive fireball flaming massacre into a forest fire. He was in that for 32 seconds before they pulled him out. Yeah. And he's got some slightly burnt fingers. It's absolutely crazy how he's in any way, shape, or form fit now.
Well, you know alive. What? You get your fingers. Crazy. You get your fingers burnt. I mean, and I'm one to know about setting yourself on fire. So, you know, I feel you feel your pain, Roman. You know, he's not going to be.
It's just the same. Formula One driver gets punted into a barrier and bursts into a ball of flames. Big fat Cornishman boots a petrol can at a fire and bursts into flames.
Dad, that's really unfair. He's not. Don't call him a Cornishman.
Okay, sorry.
you've offended Ben. right. Anyway, that's the end of this week's Mallover podcast. Thanks for listening. Another week of random stuff, and hopefully we'll be back next week to do it all again. Go well.
Sports Social Podcast Network.